Good evening and welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Hockey Podcast. This is episode 5 and I'm your host, Andrew Dewhurst. And you can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. With me tonight is my special guest, Joel Griffin. Joel, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and tell the listeners about all the stuff that you work on.
Yeah, my name is Joel Griffith. I just got into sports writing probably, I guess, 2 years ago when I started school for journalism. Currently writing for the Hockey Writers, covering the Flames as well as fantasy hockey. I also write for the National Lacrosse League, covering the Calgary Roughnecks. And I also run my own MMA called MMA Empire. www.mmaempire.ca if you want to check it out. It's Alberta MMA fighters and events for now, anyway.
All right, great. Sounds like a great mix of things. certainly keeps you busy.
No doubt, yeah. No doubt.
So we've got a pretty varied list of players tonight. So we're going to get going with Alex DeBrincat. He's, you know, as a rookie, has had the luxury of playing on a line with Jonathan Toews. Had four points last week. What do you think of DeBrincat, and how do you see his future right now?
I think his future is incredibly bright. I think he's if the Blackhawks stick with him, he's gonna be a stud in the fantasy world in a few years. This year he's been pretty streaky. I think he's overall 32 points in 50 games, 17 goals. His production is based off of his lineup placement. The Blackhawks haven't been the same team this year. They've been shuffling their lines around a lot. So right now he is playing on the top line. But he's been as the third. I think he might have even been on the fourth line at one point. One thing that's hurting him right now is that he's not playing on the power play for an odd reason. He's not on the first or second unit, which is extremely odd considering his shot and his potential. And he's been successful on the power play already this year. But, I'm expecting that's only going to be temporary. I'm sure he'll be back up. It's really his production's based on his placement in the lineup, and but as far as the future goes, he's going to be a stud, I think.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've observed, I mean, this year at least, he appears to be probably a better real life hockey player than probably a fantasy hockey player, as his value is largely dependent on who he's playing with.
Exactly,
and that's not all that different from all most other players, really. And certainly getting, 32 points, so he probably projects to, I would expect he'll finish somewhere in the 55-ish range.
That would be my guess too. Yeah,
I mean, that's great value for a guy that you probably picked up off waivers. At some point in time in the year. So,
no doubt.
I mean, I agree. It'd be great for him to see more power play time. It looks like they shuffle his minutes up quite a bit. Like, just looking at his last five, it's ranged from 17.5 in the last game against Nashville, to just 10 minutes, on the 22nd against Tampa. So,
just crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, as you noted, it is a lot of shuffling, and he's a rookie, so probably playing for a guy like Joel Quenneville, he's bound to get benched here and there as he makes mistakes and they try to instill some lessons along with that. But yeah, overall I agree, he's certainly, if he's available in your league, you should probably go and get him, unless you're playing in like a really shallow, maybe a 10-team league or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. The shallowest of leagues, he's probably not going to be added too much value. But any normal average league or deep league, he's a 100% should be rostered.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just gonna pull up actually his availability here, just because I'm interested in what that actually is, because I expect he probably isn't widely available. Because he plays for Chicago.
I'm pretty sure last I saw he was definitely over 50%.
Yeah, he's currently 68% owned on Fantrax leagues.
Yeah.
But I mean, that still means he is available in 32% of leagues.
For sure, exactly.
So nearly one in three. So he might be available in yours. And if he is, you know, no probably better time than now to go and get him.
For sure.
Next guy up is Alexander Radulov. Radulov appears to have really benefited from the move to the Stars. What are your thoughts on Radulov this year?
He's unreal. I wish I had him on my team. He's seems every time you look at the Dallas score sheet, he's on there. You know, he's probably on pace for the best season of his career. He's 48 points in 51 games. That Dallas play, as everyone probably is lethal, and he's locked in on that. Locked in on the top line too. He's playing, he's playing in heavy minutes in a potent offense. I don't see him declining at all either. Personally, I think he can continue this pace all year and end up being. I think he actually is one of the top. I think he is in the top 10 fantasy points in most leagues, I think. I will check that, but I'm pretty sure he is. And I don't expect him to slow down at all. I think, I think he'd be an awesome trade target if you could somehow muster up a deal good enough to get him.
Yeah, for sure. He's well on pace for a career high in points.
Oddly
enough, that career high actually came in, I think, 2006-2007. Certainly he's benefited from the move to Dallas and getting to play with, you know, better line mates. Probably in particular, I think Tyler Seguin, as they've been shuffling the lines a little bit, as it looks like Jamie Benn is now separated from Radulov and Seguin. But
yeah, it seems they're doing a lot of line stuff too.
Yeah. But I mean, at the start of the year, I never would have predicted Radulov to lead the Stars in points.
With Sagan and Ben there, that's for sure. But
he's currently a top 10 right winger in points. And, you know, all around, I mean, you look at he's a 20 plus minute per night guy. We talked about the points. He's got 15 power play points. And if you play in a league that's counting penalty minutes, he's chipping in there as well with 48. I think his shooting percentage will regress probably slightly, sitting at 15.6% now, just a bit over his career average. But I mean, that very well might stay in line, and it might not even actually be all that surprising to see it go up, as he's easily playing with the most talented players he's had to play with in his career. So
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, overall, I mean, if you can get Radulov, should you be in a league with somebody who's still thinking he's the labeled lazy Russian from early in his career, then, you know, by all means, if they don't believe in the production. But yes, certainly. I mean, otherwise he's going to be owned and should be owned in 100% of leagues otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you're in a league that's, has an additional weighting towards power play points, he's even more valuable in that case.
Yeah, for sure. Next guy we have to talk about is a little bit more interesting in the sense, and that's Sam Reinhart. So Reinhart, former second overall pick in 2014, He had a good week last week, putting up 4 points in two games. What do you see for Reinhart moving forward?
Well, I mean, there's no question he's one of the biggest fantasy disappointments this year, I would say. I mean, a lot of that has to do with Sabre's struggles overall as well. I started not exactly an ideal lineup placement. He was the top Sabre's power here, actually, in the league. And he was part of that. O'Reilly, they were all part of that. And for some reason, this year, early in the year, it was struggling. And he'd moved down to the second unit. But over the last few weeks, they've kind of seemed to have it clicking again. He's back up there, and if they can keep this going. He's still going to be, regardless, it's going to be a disappointing year for him and his owners. They were no doubt expecting better than the 10 goals, 10 assists he's put up so far in 51 games. But the Sabres are playing a little better of late, and their power play is starting to click a little more. He shifted the pace from where he's been to start the year, but it's still going to be nowhere near what I would say most people expected when they drafted him.
Yeah, I agree. Reinhart's obviously a big disappointment. The Sabres in general are a bit of a conundrum for me. I'm not sure how to explain their overall lack of success given the amount of talent on their roster.
I agree.
And I think a lot of people, and myself included, had hoped to see that turnaround with the coaching change. But it really just hasn't been there. Because I think probably from top to bottom, where when you look at Sabres players, you're probably disappointed in what you got. And that probably even includes Jack Eichel, who's been productive, but certainly maybe not what people had hoped on draft day. Mm-hmm. But looking at Reinhart, it brought me actually back to looking at the 2014 draft. And it's actually pretty interesting. And I mean, we're going to touch on one of the other players and Sam Bennett a little bit later. But overall, this was a really funny draft. Like, if you go back, people had expected Aaron Ekblad to be a lock as a stud following that draft and seeing what he did in his rookie season. But he's really been a pretty big disappointment. Mm-hmm. And just looking over this draft in general, I mean, you had Ekblad at 1, Reinhart at 2. Dreisaitl at 3, who's been up and down, but most of his mark was made in last year's playoff run. Bennett at 4, Michael DeCauley at 5, Jake Virtanen at 6, Hayden Fleury at 7, William Nylander at 8, Nikolaj Ehlers at 9, and then Nick Ritchie at 10. And there's other notables, is just Dylan Larkin at 15. Nick Schmaltz at 20 and David Pastrnak at 25, which was an absolute steal at this point.
There's the bargain, yeah.
Yeah, probably the best player in this draft as it stands right now, actually. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of leaves me with the overall sense of, like, not a probably a weaker draft, whether that was what was projected of it at the time or not, but just a lot of players that haven't panned out the way that I think that they were expected to. So
for sure.
Overall, it really kind of makes me think less of – it lowers my expectations, at least for Reinhart, as opposed to, you know, when you're looking at a guy that went second overall and you're expecting to probably be a top, you know, 25 or 30 player.
Yeah. I mean, as bad as his year has been this year, I fully expect he bounces back next year. Like you mentioned, there the amount of talent on that lineup is crazy. You know, and a couple of changes in the off season could do big things for them. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he bounces back next year in a big way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think it's just a matter of either we're gonna wait for them to finally put things, you know, shuffle the deck and get the right pairings, or probably eventually they'll get moved off, and you know, maybe it's going to be a change of scenery that that sees the real growth in some of these players.
Yeah.
Next guy we have is Jeff Petrie. Petrie's had a pretty good year so far. 22 points, 50 games, not bad for a defenseman. What are your thoughts on Petrie?
He's an interesting one because his, you know, to me his value is really based on when Shea Weber comes back. Because right now he's the guy. He's playing huge minutes, quarterbacking, top power play. And yeah, 22 points in 50 games is solid for a defenseman, and good scoring defensemen are hard to come by. Until Weber returns, he's absolutely, I think, a must own in pretty much all leagues other than most shallow leagues. Once Weber gets back, his value does take a huge hit because obviously Weber is going straight back to that top power play, top pairing, and you'll definitely see a decline, I would say, in his points. But there's also no word on when Weber's going to be back. And, you know, the further the Canadians fall out of the playoff race, the less likely it is that he returns. He's definitely worth adding. His ownership's going to be, check it out here, but it's probably not very, not crazy high. Until Weber gets back, like on ESPN leagues, he's only owned in 32%. So obviously available in quite a few leagues. It's like I said, defenseman hard to come by, and what he's doing right now, so Weber returns, no, absolutely, he's a solid add.
Yeah, I agree. 45% owned in Fantrax leagues. So he's definitely available in most. And it's actually interesting you bring up the power play. And I think probably at the end of the year, I mean, his number of points, I think, is going to be strongly tied to the power play points. I mean, he's already at a career high with 11, which is a great number. Just in general, when you consider that as a defenseman.
As a defenseman.
And, I mean, the real drawback with him right now is that he doesn't play for a very good team. So points just aren't naturally there. And if you play in plus-minus leagues, his minus 24 is going to really hurt you. Mm-hmm. As an offensive guy, probably playing more minutes than maybe he should be. He's logging like 24 to 27 minutes basically over the last five games. If that's something that your league doesn't account for in plus minus and it's just straight points, yeah, run him out there until Weber comes back, should he come back, and take whatever you can get from him, because I'm pretty sure it's probably coming for free. Unless you probably play with a whole bunch of Montreal Canadiens fans, and then maybe it didn't. and the last guy I want to talk about here, which is my goalie for the week, and that's Carter Hutton. Hutton had a great week last week. He was 2-0, made 61 saves, 984 save percentage, and got both starts essentially for the Blues last week. What are your thoughts on Hutton moving forward? And you know, is he going to supplant Jake Allen, or is this just kind of a temporary hold?
It's a really tough one because, I mean, Jake Allen. They came into the year thinking Jake Allen, you know, is their guy. But, it certainly has appeared that he kind of has taken over the starting job. I mean, he's, other than tonight, Jake Allen played, but Carter Hutton started the last eight games in a row for the St. Louis. And his 1.70 goals against average and 0.945 save percentage on the season is insane. That's in 22 games. That's ridiculous. It's hard to ignore the numbers. And I'm sure it's hard for the Blues coaching staff to ignore the numbers. Jake Allen lost tonight. I'm pretty sure that game's over now. He lost tonight. So, I mean, it just keeps, everything just keeps going in Hutton's favor. And he's done everything he needed to do to take over the job. And, I mean, starting 8 games in a row kind of shows, I think, kind of shows where the Blues are at with him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this one came really unexpected to me, as I didn't really obviously at the start of the season, it was a lot of people were really high on Jake Allen. So having Hutton come in and take over at a 50% work share is really problematic. But at the same time, like, if you've been able to go and get Hutton, just a huge value, right? Like 945 save percentage, which is fantastic, way over league average.
Dang.
Yeah. 13 wins. He's provided you to date better value than probably all of the goalies for like the bottom 5 teams.
100%. Yeah.
And just looking at him, it's like he's 32, never had a full-time gig, and I wonder if maybe he's could be one of those late bloomers, like a Craig Anderson, who goes from career backup to, you know, into his 30s to becoming a starter for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see now what they what the Blues do in the off season. Who they decide to go with, and I mean, I'm sure whichever one they don't decide to go with, I'm sure they're getting traded.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jake Allen's still probably the guy long-term because he's still pretty young.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of the Halak Price situation from, several years back now. I guess it's probably about 7 or 8 years back where, you know, you've got the younger player and you've got the older one, and the team's left making a decision as to which one you're going to keep around. It's hard to deny a 1.70 goals against and that 945 save percentage.
Insane.
On a team that's got guys that can put the puck in the net in front of them. So, if you're part of it looks like he's available in better than 30% of leagues. So, I mean, if he's available out there and you have a need for a third or fourth goalie, maybe even a second goalie, he's definitely worth going to get.
For sure. Yeah, it's like the one guy in one of my leagues, I'm in second place, and the guy I'm trying to catch has Carter Hutton, and he just keeps on racking up the points. It's like, are you kidding? Go back to Jake Allen, please.
Yeah, for sure. Really, the only concern I'd have with him at this point is, you know, if Jake Allen – I still feel like the Blues want it to be Jake Allen's job. So, you know, he's going to keep getting opportunities. And if he happens to start running with it, then I think you'll see Hutton's value drop right off the table. So,
yeah.
That also being said, he's only got 32 games left to actually do that. And if you're in head-to-head leagues, that includes playoffs, and risk starts to get pretty high on that proposition. So, so let's move forward and talk some Flames. Flames have been a super interesting team this year, at least for me. Got some very interesting players in Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Michael Ferland, and obviously what I think of as probably the best defense core in the league. And they've also got some guys that I think they're still waiting to develop. The aforementioned Sam Bennett. It sounds like you probably follow the Flames extremely closely. What do you think about Sam Bennett? Is he going to pan out, or is he gonna end up being a bust?
I hate to say it, but I mean, you know, it is starting to look. I'd have to lean towards bust. I mean, he shows the spurts that that the Flames were expecting of him when they drafted him. He does show it, but he also has like his times where he just looks lost and he just can't seem to do anything. Like to start the season, he went, I think, the first 15 games maybe without even a point. And you know, the big thing that with him is his production picked up in a huge way when they moved him to the wing. That's something I, along with a lot of other people, thought that they should do. And he's been a lot better since he's moved to the wing. Obviously, he's only got 18 points in 50 games this season, but is pretty much all of that production pretty much came from being on the wing. That the line of him, Jankowski, and Garnet Hathaway has actually been a really solid line. And like you said, it's really hard to say with him. He's he could be one of those guys that just doesn't work with the Flames, and I could see, you know, potentially they move him in the future, and he goes somewhere and looks like a whole new player and starts lighting it up. It's becoming decreasingly hard to trust him now.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I'll put him with another former first rounder for the Flames. In a dynasty or a deep keeper league, would you rather have Sam Bennett or Mark Jankowski?
That's a tough one. I have to say Mark Jankowski. He's only had a limited time in the NHL, but he's looked great, and he's got all the makings of a, you know, top six center. And he's shown he can put the puck in the net in the AHL. He was lighting it up, and it's only a matter of time with him before it translates to the NHL. I would go with Mark Jankowski in that case. I mean, going back to the actual draft, I would have said Bennett, but looking at it, seeing them now, it's for me, it's Jankowski.
Yeah, I mean, I just got Jankowski's stats in front of me right now, and I mean, certainly no one's gonna. It's hard to be impressed sometimes with 15 goals and or 15 points in 42 games. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, you're not gonna get really excited at 30 points. But I mean, 11.6 shooting percentage is pretty solid. It seems like he just needs to shoot more often. And I guess I did not recognize until I actually went to his player page that he's quite as big as he is. Like
he's 6'4",
200. Yeah. So I would wonder if maybe he's the type of guy you can kind of plant in the. That maybe has a future in front of the net on power plays and situations like that.
Yeah, for sure. That's another thing.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, like, another thing that, you know, it's hard to judge the 15 points in 42 games is he's, you know, he's playing on the third line. He's, you know, he's not seeing as many minutes. You know, down the road, eventually he's gonna see more ice time. He's gonna, you know, someone's gonna move on. He's gonna move up the lineup, and I think that's where he's gonna really show what he's made of and why the Flames drafted.
Yeah, and there's some encouraging signs of that along the way as well. He's seen as high as like 17 minutes over the last five games, but I mean, if he gets 15, 16 minutes. I think it's reasonable to project him starting to do more. I mean, he hasn't scored in his last five games, but there's certainly that's not necessarily something to look at with young players as to how well they're going to do in the future. So the other young player that I think is worth that I'd like to talk about it is Matthew Tkachuk. He had the incident early in the year with I don't remember exactly the situation, but you know, with what was coming back onto the ice after getting thrown out.
Yeah.
He certainly got the pedigree, and I remember I'd heard an interview with Keith Tkachuk not long after, and he's certainly been Matthew Tkachuk's been a student of the game, certainly a feisty player, and the future looks bright. Do you agree? Is that kind of what you've seen from him so far, as kind of a smart player in some ways more than talented?
100%. I'm in love with him as far as his future goes. He's, all I can hope is that he's going to be around for, you know, for his full career, hopefully. But I mean, yeah, 35 points this year in 48 games. He, not only that, but he leads the league in penalties drawn. Last I checked, I mean, and despite all his, you know, feisty play and his, you know, his dirty play, his penalty minutes aren't crazy. Like he's only got 42 penalty minutes this season. Backlund's got more than him. Giordano's got more than him. Troy Brower's got more. Hathaway's got more. So he's not taking a crazy amount of penalties, but he's drawing a bunch, which is, it's huge. Yeah, he's only going to continue to get better, especially offensively. You know, I mean, in the future, yeah, I could see him probably putting up 70, 80 points. And what he's on pace for this year, he's probably close to around maybe 60 points this year. But yeah, I think he's got all the makings of what you want. And again, the drawing penalties is a huge thing. It's problem with the Flames is they don't do anything with the power play right now. But that changes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, he looks like he's a future 30 goal scorer.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got 11 power play points, 14% shooting percentage, which is nice. And he's done a nice job, a fairly good job on the draw, especially as a player as young as him with winning 56% of those. So it's going to help him be available in more situations. And he sees top line minutes. Like he's typically seeing 18.5 to 19.5 minutes a night. So certainly they believe in him. And, you know, him among many other of these Flames players, because it is the forward group especially is very young. So, you know.
The top six especially, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, feels like Johnny Gaudreau's been around forever, but he's still just 24.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's much to say about Johnny Gaudreau at this point. I mean, he's this year especially, he's stayed healthy, 57 points in 50 games, which is certainly what you're looking for from him. And appears to probably be about as, you know, on pace with what his career norms are so far. It's just been staying on the ice, which I guess in my head I underrate, because I feel like he's, with the wrist injuries he's had in the past, that hasn't always been the case. But he has actually averaged well into the 70s in games played each year. So I guess that stigmatism in my head is definitely false.
Yeah, it seems like he's out for, you're right, it kind of does, you kind of do get that vibe. But yeah, no, he's seems, anything that does happen seems to recover really quick, and which 100% the Flames need.
Yeah, I guess like the only thing that stands out to me is his shooting percentage has really dipped since his rookie season. He's gone from shooting from scoring 14% of the time down to just 10. Any thoughts on why that might be? And do you think he's going to go back to being a 30-plus goal scorer?
I 100% think he will. It is weird. I mean, I know it's really hard to break down. He never used to, I don't know, I have to pull up his stats, but he never used to me, he never used to shoot the puck as much as he does now. Which I mean, that could be, you know, when you shoot it more, you know, usually that would translate to more goals, but for some reason it hasn't. It's really hard to say on that. I mean, I'm not going to complain with, you know, 57 points, but it would be nice to certainly see a couple more of them find the back of the net. But it's really hard to say that the dip in shooting percentage.
Yeah, just something that's stood out a little bit just looking at his stats. And yeah, I mean, you'll happily sometimes take away those goals rather in exchange for the assists. And some of that may also have to do with just difference in players that he's playing with. Because as he's gotten a little bit older, it's, you know, he's more relied upon to as a creator and less, you know, and sometimes that leads to worse opportunities. Mm-hmm. As far as putting the puck in the net goes. Any other forwards that you'd like to bring up and talk about? I think we've covered most of them. I think Sean Monahan's having a good year this year.
Yeah, he should be on pace for he should be on pace for his career high. I think he should surpass that, no problem. I mean, the one thing that really with the Flames right now is their power play. That's really puzzling. You wouldn't think that Chris Versteeg would have such a big impact on the power play, but he does. He's, you know, ever since he went down, their Flames power play has been pretty much non-existent, and it was huge to start the year. But ever since he went down, they just haven't been able to find the right combination. Of course, they did score a power play goal tonight, but they've went 1-for-19 in the past few games before this. So it's Versteeg is, you know, he's not certainly not a name to consider in pretty much all fantasy leagues, but there's just something about. He just seems to have the vision on the power play to get Gaudreau and Monahan the pucks in the right spots, and he just seems to open up ice for both of them to go to work.
There are always players like that where, you know, sometimes when you just look at those five guys that are out there, and it's, you know, there's sometimes just that one guy, it's like you don't really understand why it's there, but chemistry is important, right? And it doesn't, you know, you don't find chemistry on a stat sheet, but it can be a big difference maker for teams. So yeah, that's certainly something to keep an eye on, see if things turn around when Versteeg returns.
For sure.
The defense core. So I think it's about as solid as you're going to see from 1 to 6. Dougie Hamilton, I think it, from a points perspective, has had a bit of a down year this year. 24 and 50 games, down from, you know, the 50 he put up last year. But I think well on pace to be around what he did the previous 2 years of, 42, 43, probably probably be a little bit above that. Anything that's been particularly, what do you think about Dougie Hamilton? Has he been as advertised and as hoped he'd been?
Overall, I do think so. I absolutely love what he brings to the table. I wish they would keep him on the top power play. Since Versteeg's gone down, they've been shuffling up the power play units like crazy. I wish he would stay up there. He takes a ton of shots. He's got a good shot, hard shot. He's meant for the power play. He's meant for to be with the top power play and quarterbacking it. I wish they would keep him there. I think that's partially due to his decline in points this year. I think it's largely due to the Flames' struggles on the power play. Because he did do a lot of damage on the power play last year. So I think once and if the Flames power play gets back on track, you'll see an uptick in his production. But like you said, from top to bottom, I'm with you that I think they're the best defensive core in the league. And I think it's safe to say willing to sacrifice a little bit of offense for solid defense instead.
Yeah, I think of Hamilton as a player that I want to go and buy. Like, I think having a little bit of a down year, you know, if that has some potential, if you're in a dynasty or a keeper league, to go and get him, I think it's
100%
great time to go and do so. Because, I mean, there's no real reason to think that Calgary is not going to be good for at least as good as they are now, if not better, moving forward, right? And I mean, the acquisition cost at which Calgary paid to get him is baffling at times. As at this point, they basically got him for nothing. Giving up, you know, a first and it looks like 2 seconds, I think, to get him. Which are players that have not become anything for the Bruins. So, if you can go get Hamilton, I think he's definitely worth acquiring in those types of leagues. He's still young. So at just 24, although he's also another guy, it feels like he's been around forever because he's basically been in the league since he was 18. But what about his counterpart who has been in the league for a little while, Mark Giordano? Any signs of slowdown there from Gio?
He's pretty much he's just steady. He's not going to put up crazy amount of points for defensemen, but he's 100% reliable, solid. You pretty much know what you're going to get from him for the most part. At least in the last few years, he's been last year was a bit of a down year, but the previous years he was 47, 48, 56 points, 39 last year. It's probably going to be similar to where he is this year, maybe a little higher. But for a defenseman, he's 100% a reliable defenseman. Probably in the deep or the shallow leagues, you know, you're probably not going to, may or may not want to take a chance on him, but for the most part, he's just solid, reliable as far as fantasy purposes go.
Yeah, certainly a defenseman I think that should be owned in probably just about all formats, just because of that reliability, and you know where you're getting from him.
Yeah.
I mean, also a guy I don't think is available, but if he is, I expect he's probably at least as good or better than the worst defenseman on your fantasy team. Especially in a probably at least 12 to 14 teams or bigger. And how about the newest defenseman in town, Travis Hamonic? Hasn't done much for you points wise, and I don't think that's really necessarily his game.
No,
I mean his career high is 33 back in 14-15 with the Islanders.
Yeah,
never scored more than 5 goals, but overall, anything you would say about Hamonic's play so far for Calgary?
As far as fantasy purposes go, I personally don't think he's even worth looking at. It's again, like you said, it's not really why he was brought in. He was brought in as, you know, a stay-at-home defenseman, which he's actually struggled at. He's overall, I'd say he's been a disappointment in non-fantasy hockey as well. Like real life, he's been a disappointment. I don't think he's been exactly what everyone was hoping for. He is starting to, they are starting to get it together, which is good to see. But I mean, to start the year, it was certainly looking like a really bad move bringing him in, but he has shown a lot of signs of improvement. So, but yeah, as far as fantasy goes, he's not really worth a look. You'd like to see a little more improvement as far as real life goes. But again, like it obviously takes time getting used to a new team after being with another system for so long. I expect he'll be just fine in the end, but so far to me anyway, a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah. And how much of that do you think has affected TJ Brody's value? Because he's certainly had a down year so far as well.
Yeah, that's 100% a good point. Brody was last year. He was awesome as far as not just in fantasy. He was awesome in fantasy and in real life. But yeah, it's definitely hurt his value offensively. It also last year Brody was pretty much playing the top power play unit the entire year, which also helped him. Again, Flames or power play is awful right now, and they're shuffling the line. Obviously hurt Brody as well. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Brody, like he had 36 points last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns it on a little bit in the stretch here and comes close to that. It's still overall going to be a down year, but again, it's playing with Hamonic they're pulling it together as far as defensively goes, but I don't think you're going to get much offense from them.
Yeah. And I think just to wrap things up, Mike Smith is certainly more than I think filled the gap in goal this year. Probably has the most favorable situation given the defense core in front of him. Do you believe in what Mike Smith's done so far this year?
100%. He's it's despite Gaudreau and Monahan, you know, being on pace for the career highs, I think he's been the MVP by far this season. There's been so many games that the Flames wouldn't have won if it weren't for him. He's been, there's not even words to describe how good he's been. I think if he's not, he should be in the talks for Vezina for sure. He's even in fantasy, he's been awesome too. He racks up the saves. He's a workhorse as well. He starts pretty much every game unless it's a back-to-back. I have him in one of my leagues, and he's been great. He's easily been the Flames' most valuable player. And you know, you could see it when he was with Arizona. He was still a solid goalie. He just had an awful team in front of him. There was a couple of years where the Coyotes were good. You know, they were a playoff team, and he was playing awesome as well. So I'm really not surprised to see him succeeding. And when they brought him in, I was stoked. I thought that he was, I expected him to do well. I didn't expect this well, but yeah, I'm 100% buying into him, and it's just a shame he's as old as he is. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly an upgrade on Brian Elliott. And I agree. I mean, he's a guy that kind of got lost being, I think, in being in Arizona, and did have some great years there. And yeah, when they were a playoff team, I'm sure he had a lot to do with it. I mean, I look at his 2011 where he posted a 930 save percentage. Probably should have won the Vezina that year, but didn't. And he's also been, you know, kind of the tag along goalie, I think, for Team Canada in some different international situations as well. But doesn't get the ice time just because of, you know, you're playing behind Marty Roeder and guys of that ilk. So, yeah, a lot to like about what Mike Smith's done so far this year. One last thing. So, well, probably two last things. So, one question I always like to ask my guests, what's the one guy in the Flames that you would recommend players go to get for their fantasy team that they probably don't know or don't own currently?
Are we talking in a trade or off waivers?
It's probably off waivers, so somebody's probably not widely owned.
Okay. Michael Ferland, I would say. I'm not to check his ownership, but he's probably not owned, and he's probably owned in far less than 50% of leagues. And, you know, he's playing on the top line with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. He's having by far the best year of his career. He's got 19 goals already in 49 games playing on that top line, which is great. He seems to have found a home with Monahan and Gaudreau. He's also playing on the power play, not the top unit, but the second unit. He's seen looks on the top unit as well. So that's also another bonus, but, yeah, if there's a guy to go after, it's 100% Michael Ferland. He just seems to have found a connection with Gaudreau and Monahan, which is not a bad place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last one is, make a case for me for how the Flames make the playoffs this year. They're just on the outside looking in.
Yeah, they need Mike Smith has to continue playing the way he is. Or David Riddick to another extent as well. He's been unreal as the backup coming in. They need the goaltending to continue. And they also need the power play to start clicking. There's been a lot of games, especially lately. They've lost five in a row. Four of them were in overtime and shootout, but you know, there's a couple of these games could have been turned easily with just a power play goal. Could have been gone in their favor, but the power play has really been struggling. That needs to turn around. I think defense is playing fine right now, but overall power play needs to improve, and they need to find a way to start holding on to leads and building off of them. They've been coughing up a lot of leads lately, but they need to build a lead and continue building it instead of letting their team get back in.
All right. Well, that wraps things up for us. Thanks again for coming on, Joel. And if you want to let the listeners know where you can be found on social media, and just one last, you know, the stuff that you're working on.
My Twitter name is @JoelGriffith88. Yeah, again, you can find my stuff on Hockey Writers. MMAEmpire.ca is my own site, as well as the National Lacrosse League. I write for them. Also, if there's any writers out there that are listening, Hockey Writers is always looking for new writers, experienced writers. You can find all the information to apply for that right on their website. Yeah, if you're interested in writing hockey and you have experience, just check that out.
All right, great. And yeah, thanks again. And just want to say, you know, have a great fantasy hockey season.
You as well.